I'm Dean Newland, and welcome to the Business of Intuition, where I coach, facilitate, train, and speak on the hard science and meaningful experience of intuitive leadership in business, so you can make better decisions, forge real connections, and creatively solve problems to amplify your impact and simplify your life. Welcome to the Business of Intuition.
You've heard it said before, it's not important what happens to you in life, but how you respond to it that really matters. My next guest on the Business of Intuition saw a respected colleague and mentor succumb to cancer that she believed was the byproduct of a stressful, toxic work environment. And as a result, my guest made it his life's work to boldly confront mediocre and unaccountable leadership. Today, Vince Molinaro, PhD, is a global leadership advisor, speaker, and researcher on leadership accountability. As the founder and CEO of Leadership Contract Incorporated, Dr. Molinaro travels the world helping organizations build vibrant leadership cultures with truly accountable leaders. He is a New York Times best-selling author and has published several books, including Accountable Leaders, The Leadership Contract, and The Leadership Contract Field Guide. He has also co-authored Leadership Solutions and The Leadership Gap. The lack of accountability in leaders, teams, organizations, and politicians is so depressing for many that these people are now limiting the amount of news that they read or listen to each day. In this timely and fascinating discussion, Vince shares how to move from mediocrity to accountability, apathy to courage, avoidance to clarity. Well, Vince, thank you so much for being on the Business of Intuition. I'm just so glad to have you in the topic of accountability. It seems to be on the lips of a lot of people these days, and maybe it always has been, but I just wanted to sort of get your thoughts on something to get us into this discussion. But there seems to be so much energy these days for companies to create cultures of engagement. And you see a lot of energy being placed in employee engagement surveys and coaching and mentoring programs, and a lot of effort to get the voice of the employee into business decisions. However, at least it seems in my perspective, that engagement without accountability creates a certain amount of mediocrity. And so my question to get us going in this conversation is, why do leaders struggle with accountability?
It's an excellent question, and it's so great to start off with it, Dean. You know, I think in my experience, part of the challenge is what I have learned in my work as a leadership advisor, you know, with companies all over the place, is that we all kind of desire accountability. I've never met a CEO who comes into a company, looks at the culture, and sees, wow, accountability is awesome. There's always room to get better. However, sometimes we think that accountability is always about the other person. They need to be more accountable. And in fact, what I talk about in my work and in my writing is that, in fact, accountability needs to start with you. It needs to start with each person, each individual leader. That's kind of point one. Point two is that accountability has, over time, developed. Like, we kind of want it, but then there's this collective groan around the notion of it, because it comes with a bit of a negative aspect to it, because you're kind of holding others accountable. There's this kind of finger pointing going on. And what I've learned in my own experience as a leader in working with great leaders as well is that, you know, we got to switch our thinking, and that accountability can be inspiring. So that point around engagement, when you come into a company and you're an employee and you look up to your leaders and you see them being accountable every day, setting the tone of accountability, that's inspiring. If you see them kind of basically wanting accountability from everyone else and they're not stepping up, that starts to erode your engagement. So to me, that's the connection, that we're going to be all in and fully engaged if we see our leaders setting the right tone for all of us.
Understood. And I do like the idea that this is a two-way street, that it's not just the company creating this environment, this culture for engagement and accountability, but it's also incumbent on the individual. You know, we have to be a part of that mathematics, as you will.
For sure.
You know, you mentioned that accountability kind of has a negative connotation sometimes, that groan that you describe. Are we afraid to have those tough conversations? Is it about really the flip side of accountability is a fear of conflict?
Well, I think that that's certainly part of it, right? So in the book, The Leadership Contract, that really started this journey around accountability that came out in 2013, you know, I talked about sort of this notion of that leaders don't appreciate that when they take on a leadership role, they've actually entered a contract. They've signed up for something really important. And like any contract, it comes with four terms. And one of the terms is that leadership is hard work and that, you know, you're placed in a role to tackle difficult things. And what I've learned is a lot of leaders shy away from the tough things. And a lot of them, to your point, have to do with people. So it has to do with, you know, having candid conversations, giving candid feedback, managing poor performers, you know, dealing with that colleague in that other function or department across the company that you're just butting heads and you need to, and you, you know, you create all this drama around it, but never really address it. And so whether there is an aversion to conflict, which I think exists in some cases, I think at the end of the day, it's we just got to build an environment that says every time, you know, that those things emerge, you've got to tackle them head on, because what we don't realize is that when as leaders, we avoid some of the hard work, and it is legitimately hard work, right? That we don't appreciate how it weakens ourselves, weakens our teams, and weakens our companies. And that's the crux of a lot of the accountability issues, is that we got a lot of leaders who just don't have the stomach for some of the hard things they have to do. And then it really impedes the success of companies. And so that's exactly what we've got to address from an accountability standpoint. We need a good dose of courage. We need a good dose of edge. And we need to kind of come at it. Now, if you create a culture where that sort of stuff is expected and that you want your employees to come together, hash out things, resolve them, and move forward, people will step up. But if you kind of make it, you know, you kind of make it, you know, difficult, you maybe you want to, you like being liked, you like to be, to have approval, those things will get in the way of your success.
We do a lot of strategic planning. I'm sure that you've done as well. You set these wonderful goals. You set these wonderful strategies and visions. You've got all this on paper. You've had your board of directors sign off. It goes on your website. It's on the back of your business card. You got your value statements. Now we've got it set. The tough part is now leading it, now fulfilling on it. What is missing in organizations and in leadership to align behavior with those wonderful statements?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's sort of the crux of my new book, Accountable Leaders, is what ends up happening is sometimes a lot of this is on the leaders themselves, but a lot of times the organizations have to put the right mechanisms in place. So I call it kind of a dual response. So, and what that means organizationally is you've got your vision, you got your mission, you got your values, you got your strategy. What companies fail to do typically is now they hope that everyone will kind of get it and off we go.
Yeah.
But what you have to do is really take the time to pause and reflect on what does your strategy, what do your vision, your mission, vision, values, what are the implications and how leaders need to step up behaviorally? And so you have to be very clear in articulating a clear set of expectations of your leaders that really says, here's where we're setting the bar. These are the behaviors that we believe are going to be critical to executing that strategy. And, you know, my research shows, just under half of companies actually do that. And then we sit back and wonder, why aren't we successful at executing our strategy? Because you have a lot of leaders who may be unclear of the strategy or aren't clear of what they have to do behaviorally. Some will get it, but a lot don't. And so that's the kind of the missing link, is we've got to do it. So I call it, you've got to create a leadership contract for your company. And that's some of the work, consulting work that my team and I do, which is going in and saying, okay, you've got your strategy. Now, how do your leaders need to show up? Because ultimately, it's their behaviors every day that executes the strategy. They're the behaviors they demonstrate every day is what creates culture. Because ultimately, behavior leads to culture.
Very good. I remember working with a CEO and his team around culture, and that was about a 2 or 3 year process. And I remember the beginning of this particular meeting we were doing, he stood up and he was, you know, giving his support for the process we were about ready to embark on. And he said, let's be clear here. About 30% of you won't be here in a couple of years. Not because we don't love you. And we do. Right. We absolutely do. But you will decide this is not for you. Or you may not live up to the contract that we are now stating. And it kind of put, you know, a little bit of everybody stood up straight in their chair when they heard that. But gosh, if he wasn't true. And yeah. There's now actually about 40% of the people that were originally part of our you know, process is no longer there. So is that something that you prepare leaders for, is that you're not going to see everybody wanting to play the game that you want to play and be prepared for that?
Well, what that CEO did ties to the first term of the leadership contract that I referenced, that is, leadership is a decision. And you've got to sit there anytime you take on a role, anytime your company is at a major juncture or an inflection point that requires it to operate in a different way, you know, to pivot, to respond to, you know, market conditions, it changes the expectations of leaders. And so you have to exactly do what that CEO did, that says, hey, here's, you know, it sounds like he set clear expectations. Then he said, are you all in? And then he also normalized to say, you know what, as we continue to evolve, some of you won't make it, either on your own accord, because you decide I'm not in, which I actually think is a great decision when someone realizes this is not for me. Because the worst thing that you could do in a leadership role is be in it in a half-hearted way. That's what leads to, you know, the slippery slope of mediocrity. That's where the problems begin. And I think, I can't tell you how many times I've had conversations with a leader who's really, really frustrated, you know, and then you kind of start listening to him or her kind of, you know, vent about their frustration. And then you kind of go, I think you've got a decision to make here. And they go, what do you mean? I go, well, it doesn't sound like you're happy. Does the mission of the organization inspire you? Are you excited by it? I'm not sure. Well, then why are you here?
Yeah.
So you know, they kind of make it about the organization,
right?
But it's really, no, it's about you. So,
yes.
So to either figure it out and find a way to get committed, or realize it's not your place and it's time to move on, or to move to a different role where you may not have a leadership mandate that you're responsible for. So again, I'm talking strictly about people in leadership roles, because those roles matter. Back to your earlier point, as Gallup's research has found, right? A manager is 70% of the variance of employee engagement.
Right.
So, you know, you better be fully committed and all in that leadership role, or there are consequences.
So Vince, you said something interesting about making a decision in your role as a leader. What made you make the decision to focus your work on accountability? What's personal about this?
Well, you know, it's funny. You don't, sometimes you have the insights in a moment, and sometimes the insights are there, but you don't have them. You know, you kind of come back. So two particular instances very early in my life. My very first job when I was 16 years old was a part-time job I got when I was in high school, and it was in a men's clothing store. And the manager who hired me, great guy, set the tone. Every time I was around him, I kind of always sweated a little bit, because he just had high expectations for himself, for his team. He would roll up his sleeves and do whatever was necessary to help us be successful. And I just wanted to please him. Now, he was a great manager at the time. I don't even think I used the word leader. And as typically happens with great managers, he got promoted to the company's flagship store, its largest store. And in came his successor. And literally, in the first time I met him, his famous words, which he proudly repeated over and over and over again, is, don't do as I do as I say.
Mm.
And I remember they're kind of going, wait a minute, I'm not understanding this, because he was so different from my first manager. And he clearly had two standards, one for himself and one for the rest of us. And I remember how it affected my own level of engagement. My job didn't change. I was there to sell men's clothing to senior business leaders. But my motivation changed completely. So that was one, and I write about that in my newest book. Then, fast forward a few years, my first job after, you know, my college and university degree, and I'm working in a large public sector organization. And there, you know, it was really important work. We helped some of the neediest people in our society get their lives back on track. You know, we gave them financial assistance, access to retraining programs, education. So the mission of the organization was compelling, but the culture was absolutely dreadful. And there was one senior manager who was out to try to change that. And I had been there for quite a bit of time. And she came to me one day, you know, and just said, I'm seeing you in action with your clients. You're having some really good success, and it's really good, but I think you want to have more impact on this place. And I was like, how does she know that about me? It was a thought I always had, and I never shared it with my own manager. I saw so much potential in the culture, even though I didn't have that language back then. So off we went. She's created a little committee, and we started to put some things in place. And I began to see this environment change, an environment of apathy starting to become more exciting, more compelling. There was more collegiality. And I realized, wow, one manager can have an impact, a real impact. Now, the story takes a pretty dramatic turn because she had to leave the organization because she was diagnosed with lung cancer, had to leave to start her treatments. And as she left, I began to see things revert back to the way they were. And so that apathy started to seep in again. As the months went by, you know, she was a person who talked of us being the future leaders of that organization. And now the old guard, her bosses were giving us different information. I went to visit her one day, as I know she wasn't doing well. And in that visit, she shared with me her experience as a senior manager in that organization. And she described an absolutely toxic culture. And she believed that her disease was a direct function of spending her career in that toxic environment.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
2 weeks after that visit, she wrote me a letter that I have in the leadership contract book, a letter that I've kept to this day. And she basically challenged me, what are you going to do, Vince? Are you going to put up with the apathy? Are you going to, you know, take your own path? And 2 weeks after I got that letter, she passed away. And I had to make a decision about what I was going to do. And when I look back at that story, she was all about accountability, as was my first manager. And then I write the leadership contract in 2013, and all of a sudden, it has a message of accountability that resonates in the market. And now with Accountable Leaders, the new book that has come out, we're in a world, as you said, as you began, every news feed is almost about the cries for accountability as we look around our world and we see leaders struggling with the global pandemic, struggling with other massive social issues we're facing, struggling with their companies. I did a global webinar a few weeks ago, and I asked, how confident or how satisfied are you with how your executive team is stepping up? And it was split 50-50 right down the middle.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, these are legitimate challenges that leaders are facing today. But I think what I've learned in my career as a leadership advisor is that the quickest way for you to become a better leader is to focus on accountability. Because accountability is what differentiates great leaders from mediocre ones.
Excellent. It's a great tweet right there. So I was skimming over some of the chapters in your book, the new one, and we're going to give the listeners here later on a chance to learn more about connecting to that. But I sense that there are layers of accountability that you reference. There's the individual, there's the team, and there's a culture. Can you kind of quickly, you know, almost sounds Maslowian in a way, you know, self, others, organization, right, culture, planet, solar system. But what is the difference between the accountable leader who's being accountable for him or herself and others within their proxy, but then we start bringing it up into a larger number of people, like a department, like the company? Could you kind of give us the differences between accountability on that individual level versus the team level?
Yeah, so that thinking that really is the foundation of the new book, Accountable Leaders, really came out of my work with clients, where as we were bringing the ideas of the leadership contract and the message around personal accountability that leaders must demonstrate, what the clients said, you know, what the clients have said, you know, globally is, this is critical. We need leaders to be accountable, but you know what? We need them where they're also struggling is they don't know how to hold others accountable. They don't know how to build accountable teams. And we need our leaders to work together to create a culture of accountability across the organization. So that thinking really stemmed from, you know, customer problems that were basically saying, yeah, this is kind of level one. It's got to start personally. So the core idea is it's actually, it's the same thinking in many ways. I kind of say, well, there are four terms of the leadership contract that you have to embed, internalize. You've got to make that decision. You've got to be clear on your obligation. You've got to have the courage to tackle the hard work. You've got to build community personally. But those same ideas apply to a team. So as a team, you've got to have the commitment to want to be an accountable team. You've got to be clear on what is the obligation of your team. As a team, you know, I'm sure you've seen this, there isn't a team that when you ask them, so are there some tough conversations that you're avoiding as a team? Yes. Well, you got to go after those things because they don't appreciate how it's holding them back. And a lot of times I go in and my team goes in and facilitate team sessions. And when you can help a team get through a tough conversation, a really thorny issue that they've been avoiding, you know, sometimes it's a little bit like a soap opera. Everybody knows what the issue is, but they can't get themselves around a table or a Zoom call to hash it out. The second you can help them make progress, you can see the team just elevate itself to another level of performance because we don't realize how much it holds them back. And then the community piece is how they have to set the tone for other members on their team, for other colleagues across the organization. So in many ways, it's sort of those four terms really applied individually at a team and at a culture level. And that's kind of just the individual response. And then organizationally, those people, those leaders, I should say, who are responsible for putting some things in place organizationally, like the CEO, the head of HR, the board, there's some mechanisms they've got to put in place to support leaders to step up. For example, my global research shows 20% of organizations, only 20% of organizations actually have the courage to address mediocre leaders, leaders who are struggling in their roles. So only one in five. And when I've asked what's going on, they kind of go, we know who they are. We just don't know how to help them. So we just kind of leave them there.
Yes.
So organizationally, you now have essentially communicated to the rest of your employee base that we're going to basically support mediocrity.
Yeah, to your point, do as I say, not as I do.
Exactly. Yeah. There you go. That lesson comes back again.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So those are the ways they kind of play out.
So you said something earlier I wanted to bring back into play here about accountability. Does trust have to precede it? Meaning if I'm going to get buy-in, if I'm going to make the decision to follow whatever, the policy, the procedure, the leader, the vision, the goals, you know, put in the word that you want to put in. If I'm really going to put my engagement and my decision in there, do I have to have trust first? Do we have to have those crucial conversations? Do we have to, you know, the emperor doesn't have any closed discussions first before accountability can happen? Meaning, can a leader in their sequence of trying to get to accountability need to add this component around trust building before they can achieve that?
Yeah, I don't know if it's something that works that way, only because I think in the act of leading, you know, you're always building trust, right? Ah. And so I don't think it's like, okay, everyone, let's kind of trust each other before we get going. The pressures are you got to get going and build building trust. Now, where does accountability help with that? Well, if I'm a leader that basically I don't have a double standard. I don't tell you do as I do. Because, you know, that statement, do as I do, not as I say, already erodes trust.
Yeah.
Right from the get-go. So I think it's more of, if you set the tone of accountability, if you do what you say you're going to do, it's much easier for people to trust you because they know what to expect from you.
Yes.
Right. If you create a compelling vision for the team, if you communicate that employee engagement is a priority for you, if you, you know, there's a number of these ifs that you do as a leader, all those things reinforce trust on an ongoing basis. And so I talk about the connection between accountability and trust in the book. And so I think that, you know, leaders are under so much pressure today that they need to be thinking about trust building as an ongoing activity, as opposed to, oh, let's get trust in place, check.
Got it.
And then move ahead with our mandate. It's sort of like, no, you've gotta move ahead and build trust at the same time. And I think accountability is a critical part of that.
So in our little company, Mission Facilitators International, we have this guiding principle that reads, we will not step over anything. Which basically means, to those who don't have the language around it, that if we sense something is off, we're not going to just let it lay. You know, if there's a mediocre behavior, we're not going to just say, well, we're not going to address it. We will have the courage. We will make the decision to have that crucial conversation and have that. And certainly we don't always do it, but that's what we are shooting for. That also means that we might also call somebody out because we have a gut feeling that they're off. That we might say, you know what, I know that you told me that you are committed to this project, but everything in my gut is telling me right now that you're not. you're giving me all sorts of signals that this just you're not engaged, even though you tell me you are. Does intuition, that sort of mechanism, have a role to play in holding people accountable? Because oftentimes when we think about accountability, we think about written documents and contracts and guiding principles and values and things that are very tangibly identifiable. And yet, sometimes the access to whether or not somebody is accountable may be hard to find. What's your sense on that?
Yeah, well, I think in your example, there's a couple of things there, right? Number one is you set the expectation, right? That this is the way we want to operate as a team. So we're looking for people to, you know, make sure if something's coming up, we're going to flag it. We're not going to ignore it. We're not going to deny it. We're not going to pretend it's not happening there because we want to be, you know, so you've set the expectation. That's number one. I think then, you know, and this is tied to trust, but it's also this sense of that I speak about community is having someone else's back. That sometimes, you know, if you see that Vince is off and your gut's telling you that, then here's what we don't realize. A lot of times we sit back and just watch that person crash and burn because, you know, we don't want to have that tough conversation, as opposed to what I talk about. You know, when you think about the people in your life who have been tough with you, and I think about that a lot, I find that they've been people who actually cared about me. Mm. In a deep way, I care about you so much that I'm going to sit you down and maybe call you out or at least raise a question to go, hey, Vince, this is a mission critical project we have here. I know you kind of said you're committed, but I'm just, my gut telling me there's something going on. What's happening? Now, Vince could be dealing with some issues at home. Vince could be dealing with a number of issues that could be impeding his performance. You don't know that, so you don't make a judgment and write me off right off the bat. But your job is to raise it, because that's what was your expectation to begin with.
That's so good. We do a lot of customized interview-based 360s. And one of the things we tell our clients at the end of it is don't let this stop just because you now have this report. We talk about you have a development plan. Invite more feedback.
Sure.
Call out. These are the things that I know I might slip on. I'm working on it. But I give you the permission, even if you don't have any facts to back it up, to tell me if I'm not living up to that. Yeah. And when you start developing that sort of ethic, that sort of culture within a team, communication, all the other things that we've been talking about starts to improve, including accountability. Yeah, that's great. So I know there's a lot of, you know, just to sort of pull out maybe some gems here, Vince, but there are a lot of books on the market right now regarding accountability. There's Crucial Accountability. There's the Oz Principle. You could probably Google any number of them. What is it that your book, the most recent one that you referenced, is trying to address that maybe some of these other ones have not?
Well, I think it really comes down to, and this is sort of my, you know, my experience as a leadership advisor that brings kind of the strategic organizational development lens, is a lot of times, you know, and I'll give you a classic example where I was working with a group of senior leaders. I was doing kind of a half-day session. It was kind of an industry focus. And one of the heads of HR of a company, we were talking about how it's so hard to have, you know, tough conversations in companies. And they said, we brought in one of these companies that do these tough conversations training, and we put everyone through it, and we didn't move the dial at all. Yeah. And so, you know, why is that? Well, because the culture didn't perpetuate it.
Right.
You know, people weren't held accountable. The leaders weren't held accountable. And it's sometimes like you can't expect an employee to do something that you don't expect your leaders to do. The math just doesn't work. So that's why I talk about where the book's a little different, is I talk about there's a dual response, which is we as leaders at an individual level have to hold ourselves accountable. And we show how to do that individually. You need to do it with your team and with your colleagues across the organization. That's the individual response. But organizationally, when I mean organization, I mean those leaders responsible for the organization, like the board, the CEO, the senior executives, the head of HR, the head of talent and leadership development, they have the additional accountability and responsibility to put the mechanisms in place organizationally. Right. So, you know, I talk a lot about you have to have zero tolerance on mediocrity as an organization. Because there's no sense in training all your leaders in certain ways of thinking about how to be a leader, and then you keep a bunch of, or you don't help people who are struggling in their roles. And why do I use zero tolerance? Because that's what it takes. You have to be unrelenting. Back to the earlier example of the CEO that you shared. You have to be unrelenting because you can't let mediocrity seep in. The second you do, you will wake up one day. Seth Godin talks about mediocrity is a slippery slope, right? And that's what we have to do. Now, that's not to say that leaders aren't going to struggle, that the business environment changes and some leaders are not going to be able to keep up, but you got to support them. And you got to have the conversations when it's necessary to see, are they in their top form? Is this something they really want to do? Are they committed? On and on and on. So I think that's really the fundamental difference. Now, the other thing, as I said before, you know, that tweetable reference around, you know, accountability is what differentiates great leaders from mediocre ones, is really that, you know, there's so much written in, as you know, in the topic of leadership. It is, as my publisher, Wiley, my editor tells me, you know, next to cookbooks and romance novels, leadership is, you know, the most published topic. So there's no shortage of great ideas. And I think what ends up happening when I talk to the leaders I work with, I think they end up getting confused. Like, is it vulnerability? You know, is it optimism? Is it integrity, authenticity? There's all these big romantic ideas that I love to read about. But when you kind of sit there and say, how do I implement this? That's when it gets a bit trickier or just a bit unclear and confusing. So we don't get the traction we need. That's why for me, it's like, you know, there are some people who are just great inspirational leaders. They've got a knack for it. Not everyone can be that way, but you know what? We can all be more accountable.
Yes. I was thinking about, as you said this, I'm writing notes as you talk. I'm a very visual kind of a guy just to kind of get it out of my head. But I was thinking that as I could think about it, a wheel.
Right.
And that accountability is somewhere in the middle there. And it connects and supports all these other concepts, like certain aspects of leadership, like communication, like engagement, like authenticity.
Yeah.
I think it's what you said around it. How do you implement this stuff? Well, now you're getting back to accountability.
Yeah.
Accountability is the implementation tool. You know, that's how you do it, right?
Yeah.
That's the glue that connects all these other things together, which I have not seen that before. That's a brilliant way of putting it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you take, you know, authenticity is a great one because, you know, you sit there and you kind of go, think of the worst boss you've ever had, right? Real jerk, tyrant, dictator, created a toxic environment. That person's actually fairly authentic.
Yes. They're being themselves.
They're being themselves.
Right.
Right. Not a great leader, but they're being themselves. And then they kind of go, oh, because we kind of romanticize the idea of authenticity without really, no. Be clear about what that actually means, right? And so that's why I like challenging leaders. I completely agree with the idea and the construct when it comes to leadership, when it comes to being a human being for that matter. But it's great to challenge people's thinking around those things.
So I got one last quick question for you, Vince. If I am in a team and I subscribe to what you're saying 100%, in fact, I don't just subscribe to it, but I am taking courageous actions to fulfill on being more accountable myself, but I am in a culture. I am in a team. I have a leader that is not like that at all. I am an island in a sea of mediocrity. What can I do to affect change? Or do I just need to accept what is and do the best that I can? What would your recommendation be for that individual? Because I'm sure there's somebody out there that says, hey man, I'm on board. But nobody else is. I'm not saying that they can't be, but right now I'm in a dysfunctional situation. How do we address that?
Yeah, so I come at this in a very kind of direct and black and white sort of way because I think you have to in that environment. So number one is you've got to think about, because I always ask, you know, and I write about in the book as to why do people put up with leading or working for a mediocre or bad leader? Because I've learned that, you know, life is too short to waste it on a bad manager or a bad leader, right? So the first thing I think you've got to go through is does the mission of the organization, is that still compelling to you? And if it is, then you've got to find a way to make it work. So now you need to have a tough conversation with your manager. Now it could be a career limiting move and you've got to be prepared to accept if that's the case. But that's the accountability that if you are still passionate about the organization and that in that conversation you come from a place of caring, then you've got to start there. If what you get is essentially no, then it's like, okay, then it's like, do I really need to, you know, is this the function or the department where I need to be? Or do I need to move to a different part of the organization? If you believe in the organization, right? Ultimately, as I write in the book, one of my clients said years ago when she was exactly in this situation and was having a chat with her father, who was a very senior executive, and his advice to his daughter, my client, was do not lead as you're being led. Lead as you know that you must lead. Mm. Right? So then you kind of put your energy, and you reference this, on your own team. Or you form a little tribe within your organization who are a group of like-minded leaders. I mean, I've created a digital platform called the Accountable Leaders app, where we've got an online community of people from different companies who think this way, to give them the support they need to be able to get the energy to go back into their organizations in those tough environments to lead, right? So if you're still passionate about the company, you know, set the example and the tone for others. Because you'd be surprised how much that tone. I've led teams and companies with tough cultures where people would say to me, you know, Vince, working with your team is like working with a completely different company. Right? So I think a lot of leaders underestimate the kind of impact they can have when they focus on where they have control. Now, having said that, I've also worked with people who stuck around too long and they paid the price for it, like my colleague did many years ago, in terms of their own health. So that's what you've really got to be cautious about. If you've got the resolve and you've got the fight in you and you're prepared to set the tone, go for it. But if you realize, no, my health may be at risk, which then affects my family life, which affects my personal relationships, you've got a different decision to make. You may have to leave altogether.
It's interesting at that very statement that you just made. I think that some people would be thinking, I haven't even really thought that much about whether or not I really, really believe in the mission of the organization. This is just a paycheck for me. This is to put food on the table. This is to be able to get the kids through college. Now, all of a sudden, you're making me think about my own life and the things that I have to decide for myself. Oh, now all of a sudden, I got to be accountable for my quality of life, you know, and live the consequences accordingly. I also wanted to just to sort of point out, at least in the work that I've noticed, is that as we work with teams and individuals, they build up this confidence. They start getting more clear about what they really want. And then they go out and have those conversations and then they blow it because they're messy. They're slippery. Yeah. They're fumbling. They have the crucial conversation or that tough discussion and they make things worse because of how they said it, you know, and then they recoil and go, whoop, holding somebody accountable was not a good idea because it blew up in my face, you know?
Yeah.
So I think you would agree that the style in which you have these this tough conversations is paramount.
Well, for sure. And it goes back to, my team and I worked with a group of senior leaders in a company this week where this topic came out. And one of the things I've observed and I see a lot and I wrote about it is we end up try to have tough conversations in the absence of a relationship.
Say that again.
We try to have tough conversations with people where we don't really have invested the time to build a relationship in the first place.
Very good. I got it now.
So that creates the kind of dynamic that you referenced where that conversation can just go south in a big way.
Yeah.
Because, you know, ultimately, if you are investing in relationship, if you've kind of established a sense of trust, if you come out, I wrote a field guide that accompanies the leadership contract book. And in it, I got an approach to have tough conversations. And it begins in a paradoxical way, which is before you talk about the conversation, think about how much you care about that person. Because that will immediately put you in a completely different frame of mind for that conversation.
Yes.
Well, if you don't know that person, I don't know how I can care about you.
Yes.
Right? And so that's, I think, what's going on is we treat that conversation as a transactional. We're coming in, you know, here you go, Dean. Boom. See ya.
Yeah.
And you're kind of left going, what the hell is that? Right?
Yeah.
And so, but if I, as your manager and leader, have invested time in building a relationship with you, and then I talk about, once you've got that mindset around caring, tell the person it's going to be a tough conversation because it's legitimately tough. It's tough for them. It's going to be tough for you.
Yeah.
And normalize it.
Yeah. Call it
and
out.
And then try to kind of get at it. I don't think it's about techniques about, you know, step one, step two, step three, step right. four. And it's going to be this nice, you know, this is going to be messy. It's going to be emotional. People are going to react. You got to be prepared for all of that. But if there's a relationship there already to begin with, it's much easier.
What was that movie with, it was called Up in the Air. I forget what it was. It was George Clooney.
Yeah.
And so he's traveling all over the world. Yeah, that's right. And he has the job that nobody else wants to do, which is basically to fire people. And I just like, in a sense, it's like exactly what you're talking about. I'm too afraid to do this, so you go and do it because we don't have the techniques now. We're going to avoid the accountability. That's an accountability movie right there.
Yeah.
You know, and he
could do that job because it was better to not have a relationship in those instances, right?
And then,
so that's actually easier, right? And then that's the point. If you don't care.
Yeah.
It's easy.
It's exactly. It's wonderful. Right. Well, Vince, it's great talking to you. I could be on this topic all day. And I think what you're doing, your work is brilliant and needed and timely beyond measure because of the state that we're all in, and not just personally and professionally, but the world. It's a really important topic. And I really appreciate the work that you and your company are doing. How can people connect to your website, your books, whatever you've got coming up? Give us the rundown.
Yeah, so connecting personally on LinkedIn is the easiest way. The website is drvincemolinero.com, also on Twitter, and the books are, you know, available on all, you know, booksellers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and whatnot.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again for your time.
Thanks so much, Dean. It was a great conversation. Appreciate it. All the best.
Excellent.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Intuition. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Dean or Mission Facilitators Leadership, go to mfileadership.com. That's mfileadership.com.